I want to extend a good morning and greetings to everyone who has gathered here so far. I also want to have it kept in their minds about all those who have passed away, either naturally or unnaturally, who have been instrumental in working to defend not only the indigenous rights of our nations and peoples, but the rights of our Mother the Earth and all of the living beings who have been placed here. I had sent in a position paper, a paper I wrote earlier, and I guess there will be copies of it, but I will not be following that paper because of the conversations we've had these past few days, and especially the conversations yesterday arising from the issues of women and arising from the issues around spirituality, which I think are very central issues when we're considering the struggles that we as indigenous peoples have endured in the Western Hemisphere for more than 600 years, but other indigenous peoples in other parts of the world for maybe thousands of years. Because this thing that we struggle with, this way of life, this belief system, as we said yesterday, is thousands of years old. And what it has done to us in our half of the world is recent compared to what it has been doing in the other half of the world for so long. I think it is important for us to remember this idea of the half of the world. Because when we cut the world in half, this side is made up of three peoples, three continents. And on our half, there's a continuous mass of land, broken now only by the Panama Canal. But on that side, we have been one peoples, several nations, many languages, but essentially one peoples. Yesterday when we talked about our spirituality, one of my friends asked me if I could write down what I considered to be the rights of our Mother Earth. And as I wrote it, I realized it would take us all here, each from our own ways of life, many days to talk about those rights. Each of us have been called forth from the spirit realm. We existed first as spirit beings. And at the moment of our conception, we began a journey from that spirit realm to this physical realm. So we really are spirit beings having a physical experience while we're here. And at the moment of our conception, before we began our journey, all of our ancestors over there gathered around us, and they gave each of us gifts to bring to this physical world. It could be the gift of being a singer, the gift of being a designer, the gift of being a leader. But none of us came here empty-handed. We came here with the purpose that our ancestors entrusted us with to accomplish while we're over here. in this physical world, in this physical place. 3 months ago, we were waiting for the arrival of my 14th grandchild, granddaughter, and it seemed like she was late coming. And this one night, I had this dream in which there was this ball that was actually made up of many blue-white lights. And that ball of lights spoke to me. And it said to me, "Don't worry. She has some last-minute preparations to do over here before she comes to you. She's anxious to come. She's happy to come. Don't worry. She'll be there in a little while." And then they said to me, "We got one other thing we want to tell you. And we're going to try to tell it to you in terms that people would understand today. We know that you are deeply concerned about the situation with the land and the water, the things that are happening. But they said, remind the people that we are the software in the hardware. And we are taking care of this." And it made such sense to me, because in our belief system, everything is first spirit and then becomes physical. A tree, a blade of grass, fish, bird, all of us beings here carry that fire, that software that says you're to be Shuar, I'm to be Seneca, etc. Or that's to be a bird, that's to be a tree. And we have to remember, like in our teachings, the humans were the last to be made. And the creative beings who were putting this world together prepared this place for us. This dream they had, that there would be this place in the universe where these physical beings of different kinds would gather. And it's on purpose. It's supposed to be that way. But we were the last. And so before we could come here, the creative forces had to talk with the animals, the plants, the waters, the bugs, the snakes, everything. And ask them and tell them, we are getting ready to have these two-legged ones come into existence. We need to know, will you help them? Will you assist them? Yesterday afternoon, when Joe was explaining in English how what is both our opening and our closing goes, the order that it goes in, of how we give thanks. When it is fully done, when it is completely said, it takes about 3 hours to say it. Because in each of those sections, we are reminded of what the agreement is with all of those beings, whether it's the trees, the fresh waters, the salt waters, our uncles, the four winds, our grandfathers, the thunder, all those beings. It reminds us, and so it takes about 3 hours. when we do our creation story, when we say our creation story, it takes about 4 days to say it. And then there is the teachings that go with each of our ceremonies that we do throughout the year, starting with our new year and then progressing through each season and each time. And those are long teachings. And then there's our great law of peace, our political law, our governance laws. And we just completed about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, a reciting of that law, of those laws, excuse me. And that takes about 7 days. And then in the fall, every fall, right now, we gather. And it takes 4 days for us to recite the prophecies that we were given about what the future would be like. And when you hear those prophecies, what we see going on in the world today does not surprise us. Because we were told in the 1700s that this is what would be coming. And so if we were to recount not only what we would call the rights of our mother, the earth, but the rights of all beings here on this earth, it would take us about 2 months. We would have to sit for about 2 months to go through all of that and to have discussion and to achieve understanding of what all that means and what it means especially to us today. Right after my granddaughter came and I went to see her, my son and I were driving together. We're going someplace and we were talking. And it became a very magical moment. It was no longer a conversation between a father and a son. It was a conversation between two men, equals, about very important things. And when I suddenly realized it, I had very mixed feelings. I had tremendous pride in the man my son had become. But I was sad for the little boy who wasn't there no more. And he told me, because he works in the forest industry, he told me about how our world is changing, where we live. We live in the area of the world that the scientists call the Carolinian Forest. And to the north of us is what is called the Boreal Forest. And things are warming up so fast, the southern forest, the Carolinian Forest, is moving north. And the Boreal Forest is moving north into the tundra. And everything is moving north. And the ice is disappearing. And what used to be frozen earth is now soft. But he told me something that really worried me. He said, our relatives, the trees, all this time, they have been working so hard to try to keep the air clean. They're no longer able to do it. They are so full of the carbon and the toxins that the trees are reaching their maximum capacity to try to help clean the earth, to clean the air. And he told me, he said, this is very worrisome. This is very scary. He said, there's a great lie that goes on that's being told. He says you'll see things in television about planting 1 million trees or 2 million trees or whatever. He said the reality is there are no more trees being planted than what is being taken. It is a zero-sum game. There is no increase in the numbers of trees. It stays the same numbers. So if they cut 1 million, they plant 1 million. And so the imbalance continues to grow because there's no real effort to increase the number of our relative trees so that they have more of them to help clean the air. And this happens because we talked yesterday about how these people started this over on this half of the world. And they started it by cutting open the Mother Earth to force her to produce and grow where they want it. And so human men from this side of the world took it upon themselves to take over female power, to overthrow it, and to take control of the earth. This was not only a fundamental violation of the laws of creation and the laws of the lands. It is the very, very first gross violation that leads to human rights. Some time ago, they came up with this phrase in talking about their God. And the phrase says, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And so it is a phrase by which they justify converting and transforming the world in the lie that they are doing this on behalf of some God, some entity. And so as we look around, we see that they have replaced. They are attempting to replace everywhere they can the natural environment. Where I live, in my part of the world, we no longer have a forest of many trees. We have a forest of four kinds of trees. Four kinds of trees that have been planted by the industries. Because those are the trees they want for their business. And so we have these huge plantations of genetically modified trees. And we no longer have the biodiversity that is supposed to be there. And we're taught that you cannot do that without consequences. That there will be something that happens to you for trying to do that change. The Ojibwes have this word that they attach. It's Khan. And it means fake. And the kinds of political systems that were forced onto us by Canada and the United States, the people who are the head of those systems, they call them Ogima Khan. And that means fake leader, not real. But in a recent discussion, we were talking about how the world has become fake. That these trees that they have planted in our territories are not real trees. They are not the trees that that the creation gave us. They are the trees that their scientists made and have placed in our world. And so these trees do not have a spirit. They have a chemical composition that makes them grow. And they cannot grow unless Monsanto or any of those companies comes and plants them. They don't naturally propagate because they are the creation of man, not the creation of the forces of creation. They are not the creations of woman. They did not come into this world in the correct way. They did not pass through their mother to come here. They came here from a test tube. And it is not just trees. It's all sorts of things that they believe that they have the right to make, because thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That they believe that they are God and therefore have the right to do this. And because they believed they were God, they believed that they could convert us, that they had the right. There have been 4 conversions, attempts on us. The first was religious. They tried to change our beliefs. The second was sociocultural. In North America, through the creation of the boarding and the residential schools and the stealing of our children as young as 4 and 5 years old and holding them in those places until they were 16, 17, 18, to transform them, to transform their thinking, to transform everything. The third conversion is political. First in 1924 in Canada, to introduce these foreign-style governments into our territories and to overthrow our original governments. In our territory at Agwazasne, they assassinated one of our chiefs and they jailed other chiefs to bring that system in. And then in 1934 in America, in what they call the Indian Reorganization Act, that we had to be reorganized. We weren't orderly. And so they brought that in, and again, they overthrew the original government, and they created the phrase in America of federally recognized Indians, which means these are the good Indians, those are the bad Indians. If you're federally recognized, you are a good Indian, and we will talk to you. But if you're not, we won't have nothing to do with you. And a phrase rises from the 1880s about those of us who were unruly. And the phrase is, we went off the reservation. And you now hear that phrase so many times in the movies and in television, etc. One white man will accuse another white man of going off the reservation. Or they've gone native. They've become like us. And they need to be brought back under control. But those phrases start with us. A good friend of mine, Louis Seymour, an Anishinaabe who I work with in negotiating, he recently told the Canadian government during our negotiations, and what they were asking us to do was they wanted us to do a cultural mapping of the territory involved. And we have refused to do this cultural mapping. And he became frustrated with them, and he said, we understand why you want this map, so that you can put circles around where the, you find arrowheads, where you find our bones, where you find culturally significant spots, so that you can use everything in between those areas you draw a circle around. He said, but I want you to understand something. He said, the humans, us humans, we are not the keystone species. We are not what the world is built upon, because we were the last to arrive. The world may have been prepared for us so that we would have a good life, but the world doesn't need us. And you think that the world exists for your enjoyment, for your use, that the whole of life to them is a commodity. And so this is the nature, this is the real nature of the struggle. That if we do not remain what we were put on this earth to be, then the earth is truly doomed. Because we are amongst a diminishing number of people who can sit together for many days and recount those stories of our creation, the stories that the stars tell us, the stories that the various parts of this earth tell us. What is in front of us, what we are dealing with, is the continuing violence against the female spirit of life. And we as men have as our first responsibility to ensure that the female fire of life never goes out. And so our struggle for us as men is to always stand in defense of that female spirit of life. As if that ever goes out, it is over. There is no recovery from that. It is over. And so in my work with the Anishinaabe, we talked about this, what we are doing, the struggle. And they have created this phrase. And the phrase is Wizok Atatawin. And what it means in English is the way to seek what is cherished but hidden. Because when we come under attack, all beings, when they come under attack, their first instinct is to hide that part of themselves that they cherish the most, to withhold it. And the problem is, if we hide it too long, we may forget where we hid it. And then we need assistance to go find it and to bring it back. And that is exactly what we have been doing through our immersion schools, through our cultural revitalization, through our nation rebuilding, to bringing our children home, etc. We have been doing Wizok Atatawin. We have been seeking what is cherished and has been hidden, but we're bringing it out into the open. We're bringing it out into the light. Because from 1493, they made a decision that our existence was not correct and that it had to be eliminated. They have lost, actually. We have to understand that. We have to know that. They lost that war. Because we are still here. We are still doing what we're supposed to be doing. So let's start acting like winners. They've lost. They have spent trillions of dollars, millions of hours of trying to get rid of us. And we're still here. So they lost. We have won. Now, how do we advance our victory? And it begins with the restoration of our belief systems. Our belief systems, which are contained in our languages, our songs, our prayers, all those expressions, all those authentic expressions of who we are, that inform us of how we see the world, how we relate to the world, how we think about the world, and ultimately, how we behave in the world. And it is a restoration of that. And I'm glad to say that in North America, and I see now in many other places, that there are many, many great works going on. The Constitution you're working on, the restoration of the nation, of bringing that back. Our language immersion schools, the reestablishment of our family systems is going on all over. So part of when we come here to the United Nations, part of what we need to be doing here is not just pushing for more rights, but making sure that the good works, the good things that are being accomplished, that we Zokatatawin never comes under attack either. And that it continues to grow and get stronger and get bigger. And that requires us to see that we've won. We've already won. Now we just need to consolidate our victory and continue to move forward. So I thank you for your kind attention. And look forward to having discussion or whatever about these ideas and how we can move ahead. Thank you very much.